Eric Berthel. Eric, good morning, my friend.
Good morning, good morning.
Good morning, guys. You know, this is an ungodly hour to be awakened on the radio.
Don't you love it, though? Don't you love it?
We've already been here at Adam for over an hour already.
I realize that. That was kind of a little attempt at humor this morning, but
we need it. We need it all as much as we can get it out of it.
Yeah. So listen. You know, this is a very interesting morning we wake up to here in Connecticut. We saw some things play out in the last 12 hours that should bring some very serious concern to every single person that lives in our great state. And that is that what Themis spoke to, exactly what some others have spoken to, what Len Fasano has spoken to, in that we now have a process within our state government where if we don't really like the way something has been prepared and the way that something has come out, despite a process that has been in place for a really long time, essentially since the beginning of our government, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have checks and balances in place, but if we now apparently have the ability in the state of Connecticut that if we don't like the advice that has come out of an agent of the government, this being DRS, and we have a governor that asks for that to be changed, despite the will of the legislature, despite what has been put into law by the process, hey, if you put a little pressure here, a little bit of pressure there, you can go ahead and make changes to how we put things into effect with respect to the legislative process. And that is a really, really scary position for us to be in this morning as the people and as those that are serving in the government in Connecticut wake up to this advice, this new advice that came out of DRS yesterday afternoon, late afternoon, early evening, saying that, wait a minute, we took a look at it again, and we've changed the guidance, and here it is. And that is all because of pressure coming out of the governor's office and coming out of Democrats in the legislature. And, gentlemen, that is really wrong, and it's a very scary moment. And that is exactly what Len Fasano and Themis Claridis have been asking for as the leaders of the Republican House and Senate in our great state government to say, if this is broken and it's wrong, then we need to have a special session to fix it. And that has been completely ignored. And no, we can just put a little pressure on DRS, on the commissioner, and say, let's go and reword this, and everything's okay. Don't worry about it.
It's a fight over interpretation. How a new law increasing sales taxes on prepared foods is being interpreted by the state. Now, listen, Eric, they can say today, DRS can say today, that they will not interpret it one way, that they'll interpret it another way. And then a few months down the road, well after the October 1st deadline of when that bill takes effect, they could say, well, you know what, we need more revenue, so now we're going to interpret it the way that we originally interpreted it.
Gary, that's exactly right, and here's what's really disconcerting about that and scary, is that if that were to happen, and let's face it, what has not changed in Connecticut is the fiscal crisis that we're in terms of having to constantly generate more revenue to cover this constantly expanding debt and pension service that we have in Connecticut.
Yeah.
So if the government were to come back and say, if DRS were to come back and say, oh, you know what, we're going to go back to October 1st of 2019, let's say a year from now, mm-hmm. when we're in that exact situation that you just described. And now, what protection do the grocery stores have that they may now have to go back and look at hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of dollars of receipts collectively? And now they have to pay taxes on that retroactively?
This is just
really wrong. It's bad. It's bad. It's a really, really unfortunate situation that we're in. That DRS rulings are subject now to essentially political whims, and that is really, really a dangerous spot that we are in this morning.
Very dangerous. It needs to be black and white. It needs to be concrete. There's no thought of doubt, and we can't just say, well, we'll just leave it open for interpretation, and then arbitrarily change that interpretation as it fits the state. And before we brought you on, I mentioned the quote that House Minority Leader, my former leader, Themis Claridis, said about, you know, how many of you go into the car and eat, you know, you go buy five muffins and eat five muffins. Len Fasano, we got a quote from him as well. What happened with this new bill is they took the word grocery store and they put it in statute next to the word catering and eating establishment.
That's right.
It's a grocery store. And I understand that they sell prepared foods, but it's still a grocery store.
That's exactly right.
No one is.
We look at what was on the surface with this. You know, I spent a couple of days this week, earlier this week. I have Laban's Supermarkets. Laban's is a chain of three supermarkets here in Western Connecticut.
Yep.
Laban family has been doing business for three or four generations. The family started out, 100 years ago with meat cutters, butchers, basically, that, you know, back in the day, they drove around and sold meat from trucks. And that was a very common way for people to do business. But Laban's has a great store right here in Watertown. And, we were in the store talking to customers, talking to people about what the impact of this would be. And no one could find any sense in it for exactly the same thing that you were saying. If I buy five bagels or five muffins, I'm going to pay tax on it. But if I buy seven,
six,
I don't.
Yeah, you don't. Right,
or
right.
Or even what we thought was really kind of comical is that Häagen-Dazs ice cream is sold in a container that would be taxed, and Ben & Jerry's is not. Okay, because of the volume of the amount of ice cream, the number of ounces in the container.
Wow.
So all of a sudden, you know, Bob Laban Jr. made a joke that now, you know, one ice cream has a favoritism, if you will, because they're in a slightly larger container and, they would not be subject to the tax. But, you know, there's another piece of this that I think we should not forget as we move forward. And, you know, if the grocery part of this has truly been removed, then it's been removed. Right, despite an absolutely horrific process to get there.
Mm-hmm.
But we still have a new tax that has been added of 1% to every meal and every beverage that you might buy in a restaurant in Connecticut.
Yeah.
And now we have gotten to where restaurants are already struggling in Connecticut to stay afloat just because of things like minimum wage, paid FMLA, all of the mandates that, you know, we had the predictive scheduling bill, which we essentially were able to water down. But we had all of these mandates and all these new charges and new exposures to expense that were put on our restaurants. And now including this 1% tax, which is going to add to the cost of a bill. You know, if you go out to eat, and I don't care if you go out to eat at the little family restaurant in town where maybe it costs you $25 a person or $20 a person, or you go out to the five-star restaurant in town where it costs you $50 or $60 a person or whatever, you're still going to be paying more taxes. And I don't think we should lose sight of that because restaurants are still an important part of our economy in Connecticut. And I think that this tax will force some people to not go out to eat. They'll say, I can't afford it.
You're right.
Or, you know what, and by the way, folks, we're speaking with State Senator Eric Berthel, that could happen in Central Connecticut, although you're always going to have people that's going to go out to eat no matter what. How about if you own a restaurant in a border town where you're sitting there going, well, I could eat it, and I'll just pick any restaurant, Chili's, just off the top of my head. I could eat at Chili's in Enfield, or I can just drive 10 minutes or less than that into Massachusetts and go to the Chili's there and not be charged as much. You know, the same could be said, I suppose, for gasoline, you know, here in the state.
Well, all of that is true, and people will do that. You know, I had the opportunity to be in Pennsylvania over the summer, and I was with my oldest son, took the trip with me. It was a business trip, and clothing. Just another example. Clothing in Pennsylvania is not under $100, is never subject to a tax. We give a 1 week break, as we know, in August, that back to school week. But, you know, for where I live in Watertown, I can be in Pennsylvania in probably 90 minutes, maybe 2 hours to be over in, like the Scranton area.
Mm-hmm.
If I had five or six kids that I had to buy clothing why wouldn't I take the ride with a tank of gas? I'm going to probably save hundreds of dollars in taxes. And there's nothing that prevents anyone from doing that. Right? I mean, you can go and it's part of living in a free society, right? But these are the things that I think we're very short-sighted on in the legislature and that my Republican colleagues and I try to bring to light. But we are, you know, to go back to this whole thing, this whole debacle with this grocery tax, we have some very, very serious issues to bring up and raise. Gary, you know, we may not get called in at all.
You probably won't. Okay?
But this is going to have to be a top priority when we get back in February to say that we cannot allow this type of process to happen in our state government because basically the people have lost control when you have a governor's office and an agent of the government that can go and simply on a whim go and change advice and change language without taking into regard the specific wording of what's in statute, what the governor signed when he signed that bill and enacted it into law.
Yeah, and it's the governor. Remember, he did sign this bill. And now he's backstepping a little bit and going, oh, whoa, this wasn't what it was intended for. Did he himself not read the bill before he signed it?
Well, I think that raises that question, doesn't it? It sure does.
And what about the Democrats who voted for this, who've heard from some of their constituents and are now backpedaling, going, oh, well, no, that's, well, basically, you've endorsed this bill by your vote, by your yes vote. You've endorsed it because they're trying to, like, back away from it.
Well, I think that the Democrats in Connecticut have realized that this is something they will continue to own, and that they owned as the sun started to rise on this legislation over the last couple of weeks. When we start looking at what gets enacted in July, we start back in June, we start looking at what's going to be enacted in October, which is now 12 days away from now, or whatever it is, or 10 days away from now. Yeah, it really raises questions. Was this just something that the Democrats thought was just going to squeak in and fly by? Assuredly, you talk to guys like Bob Laban, and who's president and CEO of these three supermarkets here in Western Connecticut, and it certainly was not going to just slip by and be enacted. This was going to be an onerous process for them, with thousands and thousands of new codes they were going to have to program into their point of sale and
right.
their scales and all that. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, listen,
ridiculous.
I'm running out of time. I only got just a couple of minutes left, less than that, and I still have two questions. I got to ask you. Number one, when you go back into session, it's a short session next year. So in February, when you go back into session, what can you do to repeal? And you got to answer this really quickly, to repeal this bill.
Well, I don't know that we'll repeal the bill itself, because it was part of the budget package. But I think we're going to have to enact some sort of legislation or put rules into place that do not allow the process that has played out in the last 12, 18 hours, 36 hours, whatever, to go without the proper checks and balances. If there's an error, then the legislature needs to be called back in to fix that. It cannot be done at the whim of the governor and an agent and one of the departments of the government.
Okay, and my final question, and again, only a minute left.
Yeah.
Constituents, our listeners, the general public in the state of Connecticut, is there still time for them to get involved and contact their Democrat state representative and state senator?
Yes, and every Republican legislator has put out on their social media or through email blasts for people to call the Democratic caucuses, both the Democratic House office and Democratic Senate office, and to express their concern and disappointment with this process. Absolutely. And those numbers are all over my social media, all over every Republican legislator's website, to call and express that they are very concerned and do not like the fact that we have this playing out.
And if they don't do it, you know what you do? You throw them out.
Yeah. Well, you're right, Brad. You're absolutely right. And that day is little over a year from now. We have elections in about 55 weeks for the entire General Assembly.
Oh, but who's counting, right? 55 weeks.
Who's counting? That's right. Might be a little more than that. It might be 56 weeks.
Gotta run. Thank you so much, Senator Eric Berthel.